Hola, welcome to the American Dream Podcast. I am your host, Elias Torres, and on this show, I talk to underrepresented founders and seasoned executives about how they achieve their versions of the American Dream. We discuss what the journey looked like, the obstacles they face along the way, and what they wish they had known when they started. Today's episode features operator turned investor Viviana Faga. Viv is a general partner at Felices Ventures, a venture capital firm focused on backing founders building iconic companies that transcended boundaries. Prior to Felices, Viv led marketing initiatives at Salesforce and Microsoft. On this episode, Viv shares her career trajectory, why she believes so strongly in startup culture, and we discuss the grit that is necessary to build successful careers. Let's get into it. Welcome to the American Dream Podcast.
Thank you so much for having me, Elias. I could not be more excited to be here.
No, absolutely. The story of how we met was post-announcing of the fundraising for agency. A lot of VCs reached out. I saw your name come by in one of the emails, and I don't know what made me look, because I think it just said Viv and said Faga, and I'm like, I don't know what that is. And so I just put it on Google, and I saw in your bio, you're from Guadalajara, Mexico. And I said, it's a Latina in venture. I am just replying to her just for that. Tell us a little bit about your story, right? There's the childhood story and your Latina-ness, right? And then talk a little bit about this, how you're in the valley and how you end up in venture, right? So maybe start from the early days.
It's definitely not a linear path, and it's not traditional. I don't think I ever saw myself in venture. It's really random how I ended up in it. But I feel like my entire career has been like one fantastic accident. I don't know if you feel that way about yourself, but it's sort of like the best way for things to happen. I actually had a founder recently say this to me, and actually it was a Chris Valenzuela from Runway, where we were chatting about the founder path. And he said, you know, as a founder, you always have to have your end goal in mind. Like, let's say it's Z. From A to Z, I know what Z looks like, but you have to let go of A, B, and C. Because if you're prescriptive about how to get to Z, you'll never get there, right? And you have to like let go of these in-between paths. And I think all of us, when we're figuring out, you know, how to be successful in tech, sort of have to let go. But my path is interesting. So I grew up in San Jose, California. So I grew up in the Bay Area. My parents are from a very rural town outside of Guadalajara. And they immigrated, you know, 50 years ago. And like many of these stories sort of, in many respects, escaped a life of poverty, right? My father came over, had no money, third grade education, started out in the cotton fields in Southern California. And then actually was arrested and thrown in jail for not being, you know, documented. And it was the kindness of a police officer at the jail who looked at his hands and knew he was working the fields and said, "This isn't a criminal. I'm going to let him escape through the back door." So he let him go. And that changed our lives, right? So then my dad kept working and then ended up starting his own small business. So he's an entrepreneur too. And so I helped him. He couldn't read or write English very well. And so what's funny is I would write all the business checks and balance the budgets. And but he's a very smart man and incredibly hardworking. And so Padilla Gardening Service was the name of the company. That's my maiden name. And that's, I just sort of saw his work and his hard work. And so what was cool about my dad was what most people viewed as junk, he would view as treasure. So as a gardener, he'd work with people and they'd say, "Oh, I have this old telephone. I can't get it to work. Do you want it? Or here's a vacuum cleaner. You know, it's garbage. Take it." And he'd say, like, "This is awesome. I need to give it to my brother and I." So we had four kids and we loved taking things apart, putting it back together. And that was sort of my foundation. Like, what is engineering? Well, you can have theory or you can actually do it. So that's what we would do every weekend, is all the junk my dad would get, we would like disassemble it, put it back together. And my parents always felt like we were so spoiled. Now, if you talk to most people, we didn't have much. You know, we had a family. We loved each other.
You were spoiled. I will tell you that. I'm with your dad. You were spoiled. You know why? Because I grew up in Nicaragua. And so there was no rich American white with all this stuff that they were giving away and throwing out, right? And so like I dreamed of those days of like getting hand-me-downs or like pick up from the trash. They're like, I would have loved to have an old phone and an old, like, because here there's just so much waste.
So much. Yeah. It's a gift. Yeah. And my dad knew that. You know, he was so poor, couldn't afford a pair of shoes, slept on potato sacks. He's like, you are so spoiled. And so every summer he would send all the kids back to herd cattle on a farm in Mexico. So I would spend 2 to 4 weeks, you know, in El Rancho, on the ranch, farming, no running water on this farm, okay? And it was a beautiful experience, but it was a lot of hard work. And you would then, and that really was that experience of, man, do I have it good in America? Doesn't matter if, you know, we might not have a lot of money, but we really do have a lot on a relative basis. So
you guys, I mean, that's still big, yours, but you had a ranch in Mexico. I mean,
it was a self-serving ranch, and we would sell, and that was my mom's family. You know, my dad's family was very poor. My mom's family had a little bit more money, but again, yeah, we had to go back and herd the cattle and tend to the sheep and do it all. And that was important. So that's really kind of where my career kind of started, in engineering, sort of in the untraditional sense. And then I went to college, but I always loved this idea of like taking things apart and putting them back together and deconstructing things. So I went to college, management information systems major. And I don't know about you after college, but I graduated in 2001, which was a terrible time.
I graduated in 98.
Okay. So you were in the dot-com high, actually.
Yeah. I got some stories there, but, I was scared. I tried to leave IBM. I just joined IBM, my first job. So when I tried to escape to New York City with some friends that wanted to do a startup, I backed out. They convinced me to stay with the little race and the little RSUs and the little nice care. And I missed the dot-com boom.
But you know what? What's interesting about your story is like, that's part of probably your Latino roots, which is like, you're making good money and it's a little bit safe. Right. And like, my parents were like, yes, go work for a big company after college because it's safe. Right. And so actually doing what we're doing is, I don't know if your parents view it this way. My parents view it as like very risky in many respects.
Yeah. Yeah. But I would say that's a very important observation. I'm going to tell you something. I think I pride myself in not calculating for money. Mm-hmm. I don't think it was a money thing. I am a sucker for relationships, right? So what really happened is that I had already put my notice. I was quitting to go work in New York City with some friends. And my wife is from Ecuador, and she was coming back from an Ecuador trip. And I drove from Connecticut to JFK. This is, you know, I just didn't know. And I just parked my car and I went to see at what time she arrived, because I couldn't tell what time she arrived. So I went and looked at the monitor by the baggage claim, and she was delayed. And when I started running towards the luggage, the tow truck took my car. And so my car was gone, but I had my IBM laptop and a phone modem cable. And I connected to the AT&T global network. And I was on my computer on the internet, sitting on the floor of the baggage claim. And my vice president of IBM, who named the ThinkPad, I told him where I was. He goes, I heard you're leaving. I've been there like only for a year or less, but he liked me so much that he said, I heard you're leaving. Yeah, I'm leaving. And then he goes, where are you? I'm at the airport. This is what happened. He sends me a car. He gets me a hotel room. He put strawberries in champagne that I've never even tasted champagne in my life. I was 22 years old. And then he goes, you spend the night there, you go get your car, and you wait for your wife till she arrives at 2 a.m. And that act made me stay 10 years at IBM. You know what I mean?
That's amazing. It's kindness.
And so that just taught me that we need to treat our team right.
Right.
And so, cause I'm that loyal, right? I'm just that, right. I'm that thankful and grateful. So it was not the calculation or the safety. It was like,
A lot to you in that moment. You were, yeah. I mean, I think a lot of founders, we expect so much of everyone that works for us, but it does matter when someone looks out for you. There's a lot of loyalty you can learn from that. That's great.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Sorry. This is not about me. It's about you. So
no, that's super interesting.
You have the farm. You have, which is like, how do we teach our kids that, right? So you have the farm, and then you have your parents really poor. You're putting together. What's your degree?
Management Information Systems. So I loved.
That's what I did.
So you did. Okay, great. So blended CS and business degree, which was fantastic. It was a good mix. And I thought about going to business school, but I ended up not going down that path because I found business school was great for people who wanted to change careers, but I was having so much fun, yeah, you know, doing what I was doing at Salesforce that.
Yeah. So where'd you go to school? I mean, for you, Salesforce is like me, IBM. I'm jealous. I wish I would have been at Salesforce. Yeah,
so my first day of work, this is a wild story, sadly enough, was September 12th, 2001. So that is a formative experience, right? You graduate .com bust. Everyone tells you you're crazy to go into tech. You're in tech. Everyone, I don't know if you remember this, but everybody's offers were being rescinded. I was one of the few who got to keep their job. And then interestingly enough, I joined in the CRM practice and they sent me to implement Siebel systems in that era. And so it became quite clear to me that client server was not the future. And then I had a good friend from college who was one of the first developers at Salesforce, which was one of the few tech companies in San Francisco. It was pre-IPO, everybody fit in a conference room. And he said, you know, you have all this Siebel experience, you should come join us. And so when I quit Accenture, people thought I was insane. I mean, they were like, what are you doing? You're going to a .com? Like, haven't you heard what happened to all those .coms? No one's going to put their data in. It wasn't even the cloud then. It was like SaaS, like online. No one's going to do that. And so when I started out, it was just an SMB company and it wasn't an enterprise software company, really. It was selling to small businesses. And it was small and Mark knew all of us and he would go up to our desks and ask us what we're working on. And I was one of the youngest people they hired at the time. And I started out in customer success. It was the first customer success team ever. And then
in the history of the world.
And then I was asked to join the sales engineering team. I was young. So I loved this idea of like, you're smart, young, go try lots of different things. And this is a true story. It's so random, but Mark was quite maniacal about this like certification. You've probably, and now they call it like Trailhead, but even in those days, this was maybe 2007. Salesforce was just launching the platform and everyone had to go home and do like 19, 20 hours of homework on these various modules. There was like the Salesforce automation module and the service and support module. And the newest one was the platform. And he literally told the whole company, we're going to draw names from a hat. And if your name gets drawn, you have 1 minute to prepare. So you better do your homework and you're going to have to pitch the whole company on that specific product line. So my name was drawn for the platform pitch, which was the hardest pitch and the newest pitch. And lo and behold, of the 19 pitches, Mark's product marketing team came up to me and they're like, yeah, you are no longer a sales engineer. You now work in product marketing, building decks for Mark. And so apparently that was, you know, what transpired after this pitch. I won this like best pitch award. And then I moved into product marketing and it was me and my boss and Mark and his team. And we really wrote all of his pitches for all the keynotes that you see at Dreamforce. And that was just a ton of fun. And it was like an MBA in marketing, right? You mean the
old world and the new world, you know?
Yeah. That slide is that came out of our team. Sure.
That's the foundation of any pitch for any company, right?
There are frameworks actually. Yeah, there are specific frameworks.
The world has changed.
Mm-hmm. The from to, yeah, it's great. There's a lot. There's the pain slide. So anyway, had a ton of fun.
The chasm
is another one. Yes, but we had a ton of fun and it was a great career. And frankly, I left Salesforce once there were. It was like 7 years and 10,000 employees. So I learned a ton, but it was too big of a company at that point, right? 10,000 employees. I liked smaller lean startups. And so I went to this company called Yammer, a bunch of my Salesforce colleagues, similar to you, I like relationships. A lot of my Salesforce colleagues went to this company called Yammer and it was a precursor to Slack. So it was very similar to Slack. And David Sachs ran that company. And what's so funny is it was the same thing. People told me I was nuts. No one's going to use social for work. Why would anybody?
We keep this podcast neutral to the tech drama, right?
There's no tech drama. But it was still, you know, people told me I was nuts. And so I felt like, no, this is the way people are going to get work done. And joined that company, had a great run there, ran marketing, and then it was sold to Microsoft. And then I ended up spending a couple of years running all of it.
1.2, 1.4, what was it?
Just shy of 1.3 billion. Yeah. Yeah. And then that, I mean, that's 10 years ago, 9 years ago. That's a lot of money, right? It was a great, great outcome.
Was CRV in that, in Yammer?
I think so. I think a lot of funds were in that one. Yeah. He'd raised quite a bit of money.
Yeah. I remember that being, the it beat Chatter.
That's right. I worked on Chatter at Salesforce. So I knew that it was not the way of the future. Tying social to CRM, like nobody used, you know, sales reps use CRM once a week, right? So it didn't make sense that a product that you need to use every day should be tied to this. But anyway, long story short, that was so that's been my run. You know, I went to a couple other startups, tried to help Saks kind of turn around Zenefits post.
Oh, you joined Zenefits?
I did that for just shy of a year. It was not fun. No, it was after Parker had left. So I don't, you know much about what happened there, but you know, Saks was running the company at that point. And he asked me to come and try and help him. And I think pretty quickly we realized that you really couldn't turn that business around no matter what you did. But
unless you were Parker.
Maybe, you know, who knows?
He did it with Rippling, I'm saying. He's your turner around.
But he built a bit of a different business. Right.
Yeah. Sort of. I mean, I guess I don't know that, but they have a PEO now, right? So Rippling, that's what we use for agencies. So I get my benefits through them. He went deep and broad, and now he's. That's amazing, Viv. I mean, you're like. Sometimes I tell my story that I'm like this techie guy from a distance. I was just from Tampa, Florida. Moving up the East Coast, and I just been far away from all the action. You were in the middle. You're so lucky. You're in all the action. You still are in all the action.
Yeah, it's a ton of fun. I feel really lucky. Like I have been in it, and I've seen the good and the bad. Actually, Zenefits was great to see what you don't want to happen to a company. And you know, I can't speak to the particulars of why what happened, or I fault no one, but you just,
it doesn't matter. I mean, this,
yeah, just the point is though, you never want to get there. Right. And that's because I think it was a great company with a lot of potential and things just didn't work out.
Viv, I mean, this podcast is for first foremost Latinos. I think I want to showcase Latinos and all immigrants of, I believe in role models, right? I believe in people. What I mean by a role model is like Mark Benioff is a role model for me. I don't need to know him, but he's a role model. You just want to get to know why he's a role model, right? And there's role models that you know and you meet and blah, blah, blah. But I want to put here people on this podcast so people can see what's possible. Because when you see someone like you, right, you've been in a farm in Mexico, and there's many Latinos haven't even done that. You know what I mean? And like you're a real deal. And then you had your parent arrested for being in the fields and all this stuff. That's you're the real deal, right? And then you're a role model. But now I need you to brag a little bit, right? Because you told me the stories, and I don't think if someone is a young person has no clue who you are. You're so humble. You haven't said titles. You haven't, you just been like, I went here and then I followed here and then I went there and then I did this. Now let's do some bragging. Let's drop some numbers. Let's, before you do that, like you're a venture capitalist at Felice's venture, right? Drop some numbers. Just go for it. Just so people know, like,
so I've been at Felice's for about 3 years and the fund is about 15 years old. And we have about 3 billion in terms of assets under management. And the claim to fame for the firm in terms of companies invested. So it was a first or very early investor in, you know, Canva, Shopify, Adyen, Notion, to name a few. And I think the claim to fame is that we're a very diverse fund from a people perspective, and just how we think. right? And I think we've always followed entrepreneurs and we've invested in them no matter where they are. Now, a lot of VC funds do that. But in the, you know, 15 years ago, I didn't, we'll talk about how he had to get in a plane to Ottawa. Nobody wanted to back Shopify because they didn't want to get in a plane and get to Ottawa. And he said, no problem. I'll be there. Right. Mel and Cliff coming over from Australia, people said, huh, husband, wife, team, Australia, do we really want to back them? And the team said, absolutely. Right. So we sort of pride ourselves on that. And so we look a little bit different than a lot of other venture firms, because we think that's important. And then, I mean, I've been lucky. I've backed some pretty incredible companies in my 3 years here. One of them is Runway ML, which is building, you know, the leading foundation model for video and image generation. They just announced a huge partnership with Lionsgate for its class. I think OpenAI is trying to copy them, to give you some perspective. I mean, it's just an incredible, incredible company. And Chris is just, and his team, just phenomenal in terms of just like, again, I feel like I've been lucky because in my career, I've tried to pick what I call waves, right? Before the cloud was the cloud, I said, that's the thing. Before social became a thing, right? And then of course, Slack came in with whatever, $20, $30 billion outcome. I went to Yammer. And so I feel like I'm trying to do that now with my fund. Who are the founders that are building the future? But it's going to look stupid to everybody else. It doesn't look obvious. Right. And that's what you want to find and you want to believe in them. And like for Runway, when we invested in them, he did have 10 term sheets for our round, but it was still non-obvious. Right. And it felt like, boy, this is risky, but I have to back Chris no matter what. Right. I don't care that he's not from Silicon Valley. He's not traditional, that he's an immigrant, right, from Chile. So I'm looking for these founders. And so I think that's why I've been lucky. So Supabase is another one. Paul Copplestone is, you know, he's from New Zealand. He lives in Spain, fully remote team, doing incredibly well. I think 40, 50% of all YC companies are now built on Supabase.
I try to use Supabase, but I'm no comment. I'm old school. I'm so old school, like almost like Mark, I almost installed Oracle.
Oh, no.
No, just kidding. Just kidding. But brag more. Do it. Just do it. Like, I mean, I'm just trying to give people an idea. Like, you have the power to write checks. What's the min? What's the max of a check that Felicis would write if you're behind a founder?
So, I mean, smallest check I've written is probably $500,000. And then the biggest is, I mean, probably Mother Duck, which is... gosh, how large was that check? Probably around $30 million, right? Yeah. So quite broad.
Yeah.
Seed series A, B predominantly, N of one companies is really our rule of thumb.
Yeah.
And our goal is to find them really early and partner with them early and be an incredible partner. And I just, again, I spent 17 years building companies, right? That is not easy in a grueling market, right? Dot-com bust. Remember, there was that whole recession in 2008 to 2010. So I saw the highs and then I also saw some lows, right? And it's like, you kind of want to see both.
We are young and experienced. You know what I mean? It's
like, absolutely.
Where's my crow's nest?
We all have them.
Yeah, I'm just looking at my bags and my, but the thing is, I mean, like, it's like, most people in their lifetimes, I just want to make sure the audience understands. You are at work with consecutively with the top companies in the Valley. You survived such a long run with Mark. Most people, founders will burn you out and chew you up to pieces if you don't measure up. You are a true, like, I don't like to say somebody has 14 years of experience. I don't really care. You are one of the few, right? You're at the top of the top that has learned, that has delivered, that has operated, because a founder burns you out if you can't keep up with them. Right.
Right.
And then you do that. You work with very difficult people and that they are very, very intense and under very stressful times. And so you must deliver in order to stay around, because otherwise they wouldn't keep you. You know, these people don't mess around. And so you're a legit operator. executive leader, well-paid, you have earned stock, you made a lot of money. And now Felisa sees you and says, of course, we want you to be part of the team, right? And now you are applying your experience and you're writing checks, you know, up to, you know, whatever, 30 million, you can maybe more. You have billions under management. You're a full partner, right, at the firm, right?
Mm-hmm. Which is, that's right.
Sometimes, you know, it's magical to find you because we always highlight, oh, 1% of the money goes to Latino companies. Or there's like, we're like 1% working in VC venture. We're looking here to the one in a million, right? That is it's a partner at a big firm. Congratulations, much respect.
Thank you. And it hasn't been easy and it hasn't been linear.
And he hasn't been short.
Yes, and it hasn't been short. I had to work for a long time to get here and I feel lucky. It's a gift to get the chance to work with these founders. But I do think it's very important for VCs to work. You know, I think maybe there's a dividing line in venture where some folks will say, hey, you don't have to necessarily work at a startup. And I just think, man, if I could give any junior venture person advice, the Latino, go work for a very fast growing startup, be the janitor, it doesn't matter. You know, go learn the ropes. And because when you're around such great talent, you learn so much. There's nothing you can read that can prepare you. There's no Harvard Business Review case study that could ever get you ready for what that's like. And you know, I mean, you worked at Drift, you worked at HubSpot. There's nothing like that experience of like a customer hates you, your product sucks, everything is failing. Maybe a competitor's outmarketed you, outgunned you. I talk a lot about that. I mean, I love very competitive markets. Unlike a lot of VCs will say, I want to find, you know, these markets where there's no competitor. I love competitive markets because then to me it says, oh, there's a real market here. And then I want to go teach my entrepreneurs like how to absolutely assassinate them. I derive like so much joy when a founder calls me and they're like, oh man, this competitor, they just copied everything. They copied my whole website. And I'm like, good, it's working, right? And like, let me teach you then how you go after them, right? Because that was Salesforce, there were always a million.
I think that's more speaking right there.
Yeah, but that's how I was trained.
And if your
founder is like, oh, that's too hard on me, I can't handle it, then I'm not for you.
I don't know him. I don't know him, but I feel like I just like, just Mark just came out and be
oh,
like.
Oh yeah, Mark is like, let's just, you know, where's that knife and how do I, and have fun with it, right? But it's fun, like it's fun. It's actually a great experience. So, and Zach's is the same way. I mean, Zach's is like, oh, you want to come for me? Like I'm, you know, so I think
I'm going to say this. I'm always super blunt. I think that that's the white confidence. I think that's the white entitlement. I think that I would say immigrants, we're like, we're always on the defense. We're always like behind and we want to help people get to that level. Right. It's like, because we always think like somebody's giving us a favor or like we are an opportunity or we don't deserve something or whatever. But it's like me, for example, now, bring me anyone. I don't fucking care. Like, bring me whoever you want. This ain't, you know, you copy me, I'm going to kill you. Like, do not mess with my shit anymore, right? I'm ready for it. But I'm in a better position to handle that, right? But before, you know, you're like covering all the bases and you don't know how to fight. You don't have friends. You don't have strategies. You don't have that. And you feel like you're going to lose everything. So you'd rather win something than not, right? At least that's my perspective, right? It's like, yeah. Versus when you're like, you've been here, you've been around money, you know, all these people, you know, you have this stuff, then you build this confidence of how to fight, right? I mean, you know, we might be as immigrants fighters inside, but we do not know how to unleash that. With the confidence, right? That somebody's been here, you know, because now that I've seen that, right? I mean, like I could, you know, be like, yeah, why not? I'm going to kill you. Don't touch my shit. You know, don't come after my customers. I will destroy you. But you need to be in a better position first, like, you know, to get there or to feel comfortable or not care, right? And so that's a very, very powerful thing you just said, that we need to make sure that people know it. You got to fight.
But how do you get there? Right. You don't get there, but you don't get there with handouts. Right. And I think that's something my parents taught me. And like, you have to get, if anyone gets it in their head, like someone's going to hand it to me for XYZ reason, get it out of your head. It's earned. It's earned through hard work, and it's earned by being the smart person in the room that gives really good advice. And I can tell you that, you know, there are no handouts. Like working for Mark, working for Saks, it's like, is your work product exceptional? If it's not, like, get out of the room. Like, I've seen both of those CEOs have fired people in front of me within 5 minutes of interacting with them.
I would get yelled at. I would be on Glassdoor if I interview someone too rough, right? And I was like, okay, I have to be this person. But I don't have time right now. Like, I interviewed this guy. It's like that he's telling me, has all this experience. And he's like, I help my team with best practices. I help. Let me show you my slides. Guy has slides and is an engineer, you know, and I'm like, stop. What did you do? Tell me about a project. Tell me something you wrote. Tell me something you scale. And the guy would just be dancing around this, right? And so I was super rough and I interrupted and I stopped him. And I was like, goodbye. And somebody else told me, well, what about work-life balance? I'm like, maybe it's not a good fit. Goodbye. You know what I mean?
Goodbye.
And so, but before I would be scared. Like, I'm no longer scared. If somebody goes and writes a Glassdoor, you know what I mean? And so, but before I was an employee at HubSpot. And so what happens if there's too many things? And then they said as a VP of engineering, and then, you know, Brian Halligan says, look, everybody, you're just ripping on everybody. So I need to let you go. Right. And so, but now this is my stuff and I care about the people that I bring in here and my time is valuable to find the right person.
Right.
And if this person is not going to show me their actions or their interests or their commitment, I move on to the next one. And so like, but I'm saying like Mark and David did that, but you know, sometimes we're scared of being who we need to be, to be tough. Right.
Right. It's different if you're working for a company and then there's like a corporate, a quote unquote corporate culture you have to align to. I mean, now it's your company. And I think it's okay to say, look, thanks for coming in. Just don't think it's going to work. And part of it is learning to just be respectful in that moment. I'm with you. I have plenty of people that worked for me when I was a CMO. So I was a CMO for a very long time. Right. So I was very young when I went to Yammer to be the VP of marketing / CMO. And there were a lot of people.
CMO at Salesforce too?
No. At Salesforce, I was a senior product marketer, right? And then from that, I went on to be VPM at Yammer, but there was no one above me, right? I was basically CMO. And again, I don't get stuck on titles. This is a huge
mistake. Yeah, no, I agree. No, I'm just curious.
Like, where can you learn? Where can you learn the most? But so I was running marketing at Yammer.
But I mean, VP of M at Salesforce is like CMO 3X at every other company in the world. I mean, it's like most CMOs don't know how to explain the product or the company, you know.
And at the time, it was still, you know, 10,000 employees, a product marketing team was still, it is what it is. It was like a senior product marketer. There was no, I don't even know that they had that many VPs. It was still, they're pretty early on in their title inflation journey. But I just, the point really being that like, I went to everybody that knew me in Salesforce was like, you're obviously a VP of marketing. So let's put you in this role at Yammer. And then when I worked with a lot of folks there, frankly, to your point, didn't know how to work hard. There's a lot of that generation that was like, oh, work-life balance. And you have to talk to me. You have to be so nice to me. And I got in trouble for that too. I mean, I was tough too. I'm like, no, honestly, like this is not a 9-to-5 job, right? Yeah. We all have to work really hard. Eventually I had kids, I had to go home, but I was back online, you know, at 9 PM till 11, right? You do what you have to do in those years.
If you don't want to do that, it's okay. But then don't go complaining to the world that you're being discriminated or you're being mistreated. No. I mean, everybody deserves to work. Everybody deserves to work the amount of hours that they can and everybody's free to make their choice, but just don't complain. You know what I mean? That's the part that bothers me when people complain.
But you got to choose what works for you. If you don't want to work those hours, there's plenty of places where you can, you know, work 40 hours a week. And then if you're going to choose to go work at a fast growing startup, you're going to know what the hours are going to be different. It's just different.
I give the same advice. You know, it's like my kids are studying CS. I have the third one applied. But my daughter worked at couple startups, well, for the Northeastern for co-op. And then she's like, I want to work at a big company. And she got a job at Apple for the summer.
Wow.
She was there this summer. But I'm like, no, forget a big companies, right? I dreamed of working at Google, but in the end, it didn't really matter for me. And and she wanted that. But I'm like, I tell everybody startups are where it's at, but still to do startups, you still have to have the luck, right? And the wisdom, like just like as a VC, to pick the right one. It's so hard. And so you
might is try to catch that wave. What are, you know, try to take a step back and ask yourself, where is there a talent vortex? Where are the really smart people going? And what do I think is really going to change the future of how we're working? Yeah. If you want to be an enterprise software, consumer is different. I can't talk to consumer. I'm not, you know, I don't focus on, I don't invest in consumer.
Neither can I. Never have. Yeah. This stuff is no good. You know, it's like when people say, you should buy a house so you can have some passive income. Like, it's like, should I invest in consumer? No, I don't know how that works. I don't know how that makes money. Question. Maybe we should wrap this up with that advice. How do someone fresh out of college picks a startup?
I think it's the things that I said. It's talent. Where's the talent vortex going? What are the companies that you think are going to be, you know, category defining companies 10 years from now that maybe people say, you're an idiot, that looks terrible right now?
How do you do that? Any tips in there? Like, how do you know, like, you imagine I'm 21. I just graduated college. I went to school in Tampa, Florida, USF. And we're telling people, just for now, let's say for sake of advice, go to the Valley. They go to the Valley. How do they find the company where the talent vortex is going? What stages?
I mean, I think an easy one for a college kid would be to look at what's going on in AI. Should I go to one of the foundation model providers where there's a lot of really great talent going to, which, you know, again, we don't know which ones will survive over time. Excuse me. So know that going into it. But then spend 2-3 years maybe at a foundation model company, whether it's Anthropic or OpenAI or et cetera, go to a Runway. I mean, a Runway is a fantastic company. Granted, again, it's incredibly hard to get these jobs. And I think Runway ran an analysis. They got, I don't know.
They accept less than
100,000 resumes and they hire 0.00002%. Like, it's pretty tough to get a job there.
It's harder to get there than Harvard. Like, we all, everything's. Yes.
But find those, apply to a lot of companies, but also, you know, try to find a good internship. It is about connections, right? And just be humble and show that you're willing to work hard.
What I'm saying is, like, at what stage would you pick Runway? Like, Runway now, I mean, should giving advice to a 21-year-old, right? It's like, find the company that already raised more than $25 million?
Probably. Oh. I think anything sub 25 is too risky, and it could go under and you'll learn a lot, and that's fine. There's a college kid that just called me in this situation, went to like 2 or 3 startups, all of them failed, in a little bit of a tough spot now, right? Whereas if you went to, you know, more of a traditional AI company for 2-3 years, you'd have that, you'd build a relationship and networking, then go to a much earlier startup, you know, that hasn't raised as much, that you're really passionate about. Like, you have to have that belief and that passion. For my career, I really believed that Salesforce was going to kill Oracle, and I was right. But I believed it when no one else believed it. I really believed social was the future of work, and I felt like...
Did they kill Oracle?
Yeah, they got bought... Well, they killed Siebel, which was bought by Oracle, right? But now the database wars are heating up, so that'll be actually an interesting... we'll see if Salesforce does anything in that arena. With Yammer, it was, I totally believed in social. There were a couple competitors, right? I went to one prior to Yammer, actually, and I knew just based on the
which technology. Was were the competitors to Yammer?
Well, there was Chatter that I worked on, but I knew tying it to Serum didn't make sense. And then there was a company called Jive Software, which
ended Jive.
Went public, and then I was there for the IPO.
But hey, I was competing with you with Yammer because I was helping IBM with the Lotus collaborative suit. We had it was Lotus. I built the blogging system for Lotus, and then we had, there was, what's it called? Lotus Community. I forget what it was. It was a suite of products. We did a blog, we did a wiki, and there was a Yammer, like, I forget the names of it. Yeah, there was an IBM product too, because it went to Microsoft, right? Because it was Microsoft Yammer. And I don't know if it was before Yammer or after Yammer acquisition. Yeah.
But, you know, you're making a good point, which is it seems obvious, but the reality is it was very competitive and nobody knew which one would win. But I sort of dug into the technology, which was, they had this like really cool, actually they released weekly, which was totally verboten in the it was just so unique and rare in the enterprise space. Nobody released weekly, right? Jive and everyone else released every quarter. And so I'm like, oh, this is the future right here. So anyway, you've got to find all of those parameters and you've got to find the one that you think has the most legs. And if you get it wrong, it's okay if you're young, right? But build that network, make those friends, show your hard work, because that will propel you. I mean, every job I've had in my career, someone called me and said, I worked with you before. I really want you to come do this now.
Yeah, no. I love that. Yeah. I mean, I think that that's, we got to share to the future generation the wisdom, but only for those that are hungry that want it, right?
No victims, no chip on your shoulder. Just got to do the hard work. That's
it. No handouts.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, Viv. It's a pleasure to do this. Thank you for coming on the show.
Thank you for having me. It's been great.
Thank you for listening to the American Dream Podcast. Make sure to subscribe so you never miss when a new episode drops every other Tuesday.